Welcome to the Cold Brew Podcast. I'm Dave Gasper, joined as always by Matt Carroll. You know us as the guys at reviewingthebrew.com, and we got a lot going on. We are into the regular season. It is off and rolling. The Milwaukee Brewers are one of the best teams in the NL Central. A little bit of a surprise from what a lot of fans may have thought coming into the season, but it's been a really good stretch, although the Brewers are coming off their first series loss of the year, losing 2 out of 3 to the Padres at home. Now they go back out on the road, which is, you know, unfortunate going back on another road trip, not seeing them at American Family Field. But hey, that's the way that the season goes. We got a great show coming up. We're going to be talking about our big surprises of the season. We got Mr. 1000 in a Brewers uniform. We got that to talk about as well. But Matt, I think the biggest news and the biggest thing that's happened this past week since we last talked is Christian Yelich. He has gone on the injured list. When we last talked, everything was fine. It was. Everything was great. Yelich was playing like an MVP and, you know, hitting for power, hitting for average. It finally looked like, you know, he's back to his old self. And as we were saying, was he ever really gone? And, you know, back to 100%. And then next thing we know, he leaves early in one of the games against Baltimore with low back discomfort. And then next thing you know, he is on the injured list. Owen Miller is back up. Joey Weimer is back up. And Christian Yelich is on the shelf. Matt, it's all too familiar. And it's all the more painful, I think, too, this time around, because we had finally seen Christian Yelich pretty much at 100%. He was pulling the ball with power. Like, everything we've been talking about on last week's pod about how great Yelich was offensively, what he's been doing, it's exactly what the Brewers needed. It's what they envisioned when they signed him. And they're only able to get a couple of weeks of it, and then bam, a back injury pops up once again and he's on the shelf.
This sucks because this is always, it seems like, how it has happened with Yelich outside of last year, where he really kind of, you know, navigated away from those last 2 years, I guess, navigated away from those injuries. The Brewers did a really good job of managing it. And then now Yelich, I mean, he was on MVP pace. I mean, look at these numbers, 333 average, 744 slugging percentage, which is just outrageous, on the back of a, you know, a double and 5 homers. He was almost up to 1 WAR on Baseball Reference. He's at a 0.8 in 11 whole games. I mean, the pace he was on was absolutely ridiculous. Obviously, it wasn't going to stay with that. You're not going to stick with a 221 OPS plus for the entire season. Like, that would be insane.
You never know. I think Barry Bonds did that once or twice.
Yeah. Yeah, and 179 was his career high in 2019 when he didn't win the MVP, go figure. But he was just on an absolutely insane pace, and then sure enough, it had to be the back issue. Like, if it was literally anything else, I think we'd be like, all right, it's a injury, he'll get past it, and we'll move on, and, you know, he'll miss some time, but whatever, we'll be good. But of course, because it's that back injury, it puts that thought in the back of Brewers fans' minds of, oh my God, here we go again. Here we go again with the back issues. And hopefully, all we got to hope is that it's precautionary. They caught it early. You put him on the shelf for a little bit so that he can get right. He was talking about it and said that, you know, it feels a little bit different than some of the other times, but it's still the back. So, you know, the good thing about it, and it's hard to say there's a silver lining in something like this, but the silver lining is that they're familiar with it. And so they know how to manage it. They managed it for years in the past, and hopefully they just are able to do it again and get them back out there.
Yeah, and just the concern being, you know, what if it lingers, even if the pain is gone once he's back and ready to go, is it going to cause a change in habits? Mm-hmm. Is it going to mess up his rhythm that he was in at the plate? I mean, just being out of games for so long, not seeing live pitching, not being able to swing and hit and face competition, that can take you out of the groove offensively, and that's exactly what he was in. He was in a groove. And it was exactly what you wanted to see. It was exactly what Yelich wanted to see at the plate. he was feeling good, and then it just does whatever to him. It just locks up on him or whatever. And now, like, who knows how long it'll be until he's back. And we saw that before. Even when he was out there on the field, it wasn't causing him pain over these past couple of years. He wasn't himself out there because of that back being messed up, whatever it is. I mean, you saw it too after the broken kneecap, just, you know, a change in habits and just doing things slightly different can take you out of a rhythm. And you can go from barreling up baseballs to missing them completely. And just those tiny little adjustments. And, you know, again, hopefully they got to it before any sort of habit set in with it of trying to avoid that kind of pain. But still, you know, you just really never know with these things. Even as good as they are at managing it, and their experience dealing with Yelich, dealing with back injuries, it's such an aggravating blow because it's happened so many times before, and you finally get him in a good spot, and then it happens again, and it just feels like you're back to square one. And it's such a helpless feeling, because now you look at that Brewers lineup, and when you had Christian Yelich, a veteran, experienced, productive hitter in that three hole, now you're replacing him in that three spot with guys like Jake Bowers and Sal Frelick. And I mean, Sal Frelick's a good hitter, but Sal Frelick's not a number three hitter. And it's not the same. The lineup hasn't been as good, especially with him out. The lineup was not good during that San Diego Padres series. So, you know, without him, filling that hole in the lineup is going to be so much more difficult because they don't really have anyone else who can fill that. I mean, if your leadoff hitter goes down, whoever it is, I mean, the Brewers have seen a rotation of guys in that leadoff spot. If your five hitter or six hitter goes down, you know, you got other guys who can fill that spot pretty easily. The three hole, Christian Yelich, especially the way he was producing, there's no one else that can really step up and fill that kind of role offensively.
Right. I mean, you could, you know, go to a William Contreras, you could go to a Willy Adames, but they've kind of carved out their niche in those other spots and become really good in those spots. About the only one I would say that I, you know, maybe would trust with that is a William Contreras. But him in particular, I mean, he did so well last year, especially, you know, out of that number two, a lot of times once it felt like Adames, once they finally moved on from that experiment. You know, Contreras, he's so good where you end up putting him. But Christian Yelich was always the guy when he was at his best. You want him in your number three. He is the type of well-rounded hitter, on base, average, power, speed, like everything that, like, you know, like I think back to when I was a kid and like the best three hole hitter when I was a kid was Ken Griffey Jr. And like, right. Because Ken Griffey Jr. was like everything, true, like five tool. But when it came to, you know, offense, he had everything. And that's what you want your three hole hitter to look like. And Yelich, when he's at his best in those MVP years and now this year, was that he provided everything. And with a Contreras, with an Adames, like as good as they are when they are, you know, performing at 100%, it's still not that all-encompassing perfection that Yelich can give you when he's MVP Yelich. So let's not gloss over that fact. The fact that Yelich was even able to be back in the three hole is huge. You know, like we had gotten to that point where Yelich was leading off and it was actually working for the Brewers as they were doing that. But dream scenario, you have Yelich as your number three guy. When Yelich is right, he can be your number three guy. And the fact that he was able to be back there and performing like he was during those MVP seasons, best case scenario for the Brewers. And so now we've gone from best case scenario to Worst case scenario, which, well, not worst case scenario. That'd be
worst case scenario is Jake Bowers in your three hole. Well, that is your worst case scenario.
I meant for Yelich. Yeah, worst case would be he's just done, but he's obviously not. He's fine. He'll be back. We'll tell ourselves that. But yeah, it's just and you again, like looking at it pulled up some of the like even more advanced numbers. He was 11 games. I get it. Small sample size. His strikeout rate was at a little over 17%. By far, that would be a career low for him. So he's seeing the ball just perfectly. His ground ball rate is down. His fly ball rate is up. His line drive rate is up. Like, everything was just coming up Milhouse for Yelich to start. Yeah, you like that. Start the season. And just, why can't we have the nice things? Like, it's,
It always feels like that for all of us in Wisconsin as Wisconsin sports fans. It always feels like, why can't we have nice things? Like you finally seem to get something and then it just gets taken away from you. It's like, okay, hey, wow, Giannis is super great. Oh, well, let's just give him a calf strain. You know, like, let's just have him get hurt.
Yeah.
Like, let's get all this going. Christian Yelich. Oh, wow, he's great again. Back problems, because of course, you know, that's just how it always seems to go. And yeah, it sucks. It sucks for the Brewers, who clearly miss him in their lineup. And you know, he's worked so hard to get back to this level after a couple of years of really struggling. And then when he finally gets there, it's just another injury to pop it up. And I mean, who knows, maybe he'll come back and he'll be just like he was in his first 11 games, and he'll just be hitting the ball well all over the place and hitting it hard. But it's just so tough to count on that now. And we were just kind of getting to the point where we could count on Christian Yelich to be that productive bat, where he's coming up and we're expecting him to do good things. Mm-hmm. You know, previously it's like, oh, he's coming up, here's a big name guy, and he's not going to come through. Because that's what we've seen the last couple of years. And finally, we get into the points like, yeah, Christian Yelich is coming up, big spot. We're going to get runs here. And now we don't know again. And the lineup, as good as it's been to start the year, is now in a completely different spot. And we've seen it struggle in the few games since. I mean, they really struggled to score runs against San Diego. And they lost their first series of the season, losing two out of those three games, including the first two of that series. It looked kind of precarious there for game number three as well, but they were able to pull it out thanks to Blake Perkins and Bryce Terang. But still,
and the bullpen.
Cannot forget the bullpen. I was speaking of the offense here, but yes, the bullpen as well, led by Bryce Wilson. It was a great game. They were able to avoid being swept.
Yeah. Yeah, and managed to shut out the Padres in the process. It was a Bryce game. Bryce Terang gets another steal and scores the winning run. Bryce Wilson ends up coming out strong, and that was the Bryce Wilson that we kind of saw last year, which was nice, really, for all of those guys. You know, Bryce Wilson looked like 2023 Bryce Wilson. Abner Uribe, who started off the season hot and then had, you know, a little hiccup after that, looked great and had a heck of an athletic play. If you haven't seen it yet, look it up. The slow roller that he picked up and threw out that would have scored a run if he had not done that, was just, and his reaction to it was, I mean, that was just amazing. Yeah. Piguero pitching some, you know, some good ball after he was one of two Brewers who got pegged in the knee by Machado.
And of course it was Machado, right? That jerk.
Yeah. He clearly is not doing that. Like you pointed out online, he's not doing that on purpose, but of course it's Machado.
Yeah.
And then Payamp, same thing. You know, he got, you know, it had been roughed up at one point this year and everything.
Yeah. And the ironic thing too was the night before when Thiago Vieira struck out Machado. Yes. And Vieira was doing like the whole fist pump and everything. He was all fired up. Machado's just like looking over. And then I could tell, I'm just like, he's thinking about kicking him in the ankle, isn't he? And then the next day, he just two comebackers right at Brewers pitchers, right off their kneecaps. And I'm just like, oh, you sly dog. I see what you did there, Manny. But not really. Like, he can't, I don't think he could really intentionally hit grounders back at their knees like that. But
no. Did you see it all? We're going to go a little off topic here. I think it was Eric Hosmer who had pointed something out on Twitter. Did you see this at all?
No.
About Juan Soto? So Juan Soto had, I don't know if he was rounding first and coming back, or if it was a, you know, fly ball and he was going back to first or something like that. And he kind of ran into the first baseman a little bit and kind of, you know, mowed him over somewhat. And it wasn't really much of a thing. And I don't know that I heard in any, you know, anyone making a stink out of it. But Eric Hosmer came up there and was like, I happened to play with a guy in San Diego where if he did the same thing, everyone would have been up in arms about it. Nothing again, not saying anything against Juan Soto, but if number 13, so that's how you know who he's talking about, number 13 does it, all of a sudden everyone has issues. It's like, okay. The problem is, look at Machado's history. Like, it goes back. I literally was scrolling Instagram the other day.
He's got a reputation.
Yeah, I came across a list of top Machado dickhead moments. And it went all the way back to when he was on the Orioles, because he's been a freaking hot-headed baby ever since he came into the league. And like, yeah, not Reese the Austin, same.
Hit him with the crowd, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Can do that to Machado too. So yeah, I just thought it was, I don't know, I thought it was ridiculous. And I didn't go down that rabbit hole, but yeah. That is what we in the business like to call false equivalency.
Yes, not exactly. Not the same thing. One thing
happens similarly does not mean the people are the same.
No, they're not. But either way, the Brewers, they've been off to a pretty good start this season, getting some good performances out of the bullpen. Abner Uribe, I mean, you mentioned him. He's been a little bit all over the place, I think we could put it that way, lately. He has gotten a lot of save opportunities, not as much lately. Then all of a sudden he got moved to the seventh inning against Baltimore, and then he pitched in the fourth inning. And then he's back in the eighth inning and throws the first pitch to the backstop, but then he ends up getting gives up a triple and then gets the next three outs, including that, you know, amazing play. But I mean, Uribe, you know, I think we all knew that it was going to end up being a kind of rotation of guys there in that ninth inning spot. Lately, it's been Yoel Piamps. Uribe got the first couple of cracks. Now it's been Piamps. And soon we'll probably see McGill get some cracks there as well. But, you know, Uribe kind of getting used a lot earlier there and kind of being all over the place. We've seen some command trouble with him. He had a couple of not-so-great outings. What do you make of Uribe and his kind of up-and-down performance so far this season, Matt?
I don't know. I'm curious if – I mean – no one's going to end up being, you know, perfect all season. Let's throw that out there. So I wasn't super concerned about Uribe, you know, when he had that first blown save and, you know, gave up some runs a couple times. That wasn't super concerning to me. I do find it very intriguing how Murphy has gone about it, because I don't think any of us were expecting him to come in after Miley. In that game the other day, like he was probably, you know, again, like maybe the last person that I expected to come in to follow him. I don't know if Murphy's maybe trying to test him a little bit, see what he's got there, see, you know, what situations do to him in terms of his makeup and his, you know, emotions, because that's always been one thing about Uribe. That's why I always felt that, you know, almost the ninth inning could be either the best or worst thing for him is, you know, some of those guys who get – Devin Williams being one of those guys who, you know, Devin Williams gets – he's made for those – either that setup or that closing situation, because his emotions almost elevate him, you know, make him better when it comes to those situations.
Different than a Hobie Milner.
Yes, just like Milner.
The exact opposite of a Hogan.
Oh, the opposite of Milner. Oh,
yes.
Right. Yes, true. Yeah, he's nothing with that guy.
Yeah. It is calm heart rate for Hobie Milner. Zero emotions at all.
Looking like an emotionless schoolboy going to
that doesn't yet know how to shave.
But with Uribe, you never were fully sure if his emotions, and you know, again, with any player who has that like intensity, will it make them an amazing late inning guy, or is it too much and it just kind of, you know, throws them off? And it felt like as he was coming up the minors, it's like, okay, he does have that, like he's the type of guy who's going to make him better. And it seemed like that was the case in, you know, the big leagues. But I wonder if Murphy's really just still trying to fully figure him out. Cause I didn't think that, you know, as he had, you know, a couple little bit of struggles there, that necessarily meant that he couldn't get the job done. It was more just one of those games. I feel like I remember he just got, it was death by a million paper cuts, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
wasn't there one of those where Uribe was just like, well, that's baseball. In 162
yeah.
games, every once in a while, you're just going to have one of those just crazy ones. So that's part of why I wasn't overly concerned. But clearly there's something that Murphy's still trying to figure out with him. And
well, and he's also so young, too. I mean, he's like, what, 23, 24?
Yeah.
This is only his second season in the big leagues. He just got promoted, you know, mid-season last year. So, I mean, it's a lot of high-leverage situations for the Brewers to trust putting him in early on here. I mean, obviously he's got the blazing stuff for it, but he's kind of a little bit like K-Rod, where it's kind of like 20 minutes of terror, where you just kind of don't entirely know where it's all going, and there's going to be some base runners, but at the end of the day he'll probably get it done. But yeah, I think that bullpen is still going to be kind of in flux. It's not going to be locked into Uribe until he can prove that he's ready for that. And he's clearly not quite there yet. But for relievers, I mean, it can happen pretty quickly once he gets things locked in there. But I want to kind of go back and talk about that Orioles series and just kind of go over a couple of the main things from it, because there were some juicy storylines to talk about, as we talked about on last week's pod, you know, some big things to look at. And, you know, the two Jacksons seeing each other, Jackson Churio, Jackson Holliday. Jackson Holliday finally got his first MLB hit against the Brewers on Sunday. Took him a while. He was really struggling through his first, like, 10, 11 at-bats to get a hit. Jackson Churio played, he's kind of cooled off a little bit over these last couple of games. And I think maybe the league's starting to figure him out a little bit, but we'll put a pin in that and come back to that. But we got to talk about the Corbin Burnes trade revenge games that we've had go on. Joey Ortiz, a three-hit revenge game, and Corbin Burnes, in his possible revenge game, William Contreras got his revenge with a leadoff home run. The Brewers made Burnes work, Matt.
Yeah.
5 innings, 3 runs. They had a lot of traffic on the base paths. They looked like a team. I mean, they had a plan of attack against Burnes. Now, most of these guys, I mean, they've seen him pitch for so long. They kind of know what he likes to do a little bit. And, you know, they've seen him plenty of times. They've seen him carve up other hitters. William Contreras certainly has seen plenty of pitches from Corbin Burnes. And Brewers were able to rough him up pretty good. 5 innings, 3 runs. That's probably about as good as you're going to get against Corbin Burnes. Like, it was a pretty good job by the Brewers to not let Burnes have his revenge game where he goes, like, 8 innings, 1 hit. No runs, striking out 12.
Right. That last part, he had struck out 5, you know, Brewers. And the Brewers, you know, as good as the offense has been this year, you know, they can – the strikeout numbers can start to move their way up a little bit still. And so 5 strikeouts for the Brewers offense, but also for Burnes, you know, that's impressive that they were to keep it at that. The, you know, Burnes was in line – for the loss at one point until that ended up being a game where actually Uribe did blow the save. So, yeah, that's as good as you can expect. And with the way that the Brewers' offense had been performing most of the year, that should have been enough. And honestly, the Brewers put up 4 runs. That most games for most teams should be enough to win. You know, unfortunately, they just weren't able to make it happen. The Brewers had Colin Ray start off. He gave up a couple homers, unfortunately, that day. 3 runs. So, you know, kind of matched Burns in terms of run outputs. But Uribe ends up coming in, giving up a couple. Milner ends up giving up a run. He's been – some of his first couple outings have been a little bit rocky, but then he came in and did Holby Milner stuff the other day and stranded the bases loaded, which was, you know, that's where he's been really good over the last couple of years, is being that, you know, inherited run blocker. And he did it really well against San Diego when he came in to do it. But, yeah, unfortunately, just couldn't quite come away with that win. Just gave up a little bit too many runs and just couldn't quite, weren't at that 6 run a game scoring average, which is, you know, only going to be sustainable for a team like the Braves, unfortunately.
Yeah, like, I mean, all week they were averaging like 9.7 runs per game.
Right.
It was exactly Nuts.
And on the season, they're still, you know, around, they probably come down under 6 now, but they were over 6 for a little bit for the entire year, the Brewers were. So, you know, they've been pumping out runs, but eventually that's going to come back to earth, and it's just a matter of whether the pitching staff can kind of keep up with it. And this year, that's going to be interesting. Starting the season, starting pitching had been, you know, better than you could imagine, you know, for considering you've got Freddy Peralta, and then at the beginning you didn't even have Wade Miley to back him up. It was Freddy Peralta and then some other guys, and that was going well for a couple weeks there, and then now it's kind of come back to earth a little bit. You got a couple injuries in there. You got a couple, you know, D.L. Hall finally ends up having a bit of a blow up start. Aaron Ashby had his unfortunate, you know, error filled start. Colin Ray again the other day gives a couple home runs. So, you know, it's that
happens when you're relying on a collection of journeymen. I mean, just straight up, like that's what happens when you're relying on Joe Ross and Wade Miley and Colin Ray and Jacob Junis, who's on the injured list. When you're relying on guys like this to fill the innings in your rotation, instead of relying on guys like Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff and Adrian Hauser to fill those innings, you're relying on completely different types of guys. You're relying on veteran career journeymen who have, you know, dealt with injuries or dealt with, you know, not great performance in their careers. And this is the bet that the Brewers made with their rotation. This is a bet that they're going to have to lie in for a while. Now, we know why they did this. They did this because they have the young starters that are coming up that they needed to clear room for. For the guys like Robert Gasser and Carlos Rodriguez and Tobias Myers and Jacob Mizorowski and guys like that, that they're expecting to be guys for them coming up here. They did it so that, you know, a guy like Joe Ross or Jacob Junis, when if they're not performing well, they're not going to stand in the way of those young guys coming up and getting starts and getting opportunities at the big league level. The Brewers have made it quite clear that they are going to give opportunities for the young guys. They're going to be a young team, and they want these guys that are going to be there for the next several years of team control until they get to be either too good, where they make too much money, then they have to trade him away for someone because they don't want to lose him to be a free agent, or they just end up not being good enough that they don't make the team anyways. That's just kind of where they're going to end up going, and we'll see what happens with these guys and who comes up when. Robert Gasser has been hurt, but we know, I mean, these veterans are they're fill-ins. These guys are journeyman fill-ins for the first couple of weeks, couple of months of the regular season until those young guys are ready to take over. And then once Gasser is ready, once Rodriguez is ready, once Ashby is ready to take on full-time starting roles, they will enter into that rotation and replace guys like Junis and Ross and Ray and Miley and whoever else. in that group. If they're not performing, if they're hurt, whatever it is, the Brewers won't hesitate to kick them aside, because once they're ready, that's what the plan is to go with. That's why they didn't go out and sign a Jordan Montgomery after they traded away Corbin Burns. That's why they didn't sign a Mike Clevinger, a Michael Lorenzen, or get guys like that, even as they were languishing out there on the open market, because they wanted to stick with these journeymans that could easily be replaced with their young rookie prospects.
Mm-hmm. Right. And by and large, the equation has clearly worked to start the season. The Brewers were leading the National League, you know, for a little bit there, for at least a few days, in terms of record. Their offense is up there.
Run differential. Yeah.
Right. If you're going to do that with your pitching staff, your offense needs to be able to support it. And for the most part, that has been the case. Hoskins started off hot, but he's come down a little bit. He's still 111 OPS plus, so he's still above average in terms of offensive production. He's got a few home runs in there. You're banking on some of the young offensive players doing well too to support that pitching staff. And you've seen Bryce Turang take a quantum leap this year so mm-hmm. far. It's working. Jackson Chourio, yeah, he cooled down a little bit recently, but he's still overall had a good start to the season. Sal Frelick started off cool and then got hot. So he's done largely pretty well. And so for the most part, that offense has supported the pitching, but it has to continue doing that for this plan to work well until those young guys are able to come up, until Gasser is healthy, until Devin Williams is healthy again and able to have the bullpen support, you know, fully support the starting pitching staff. That's why also, though, it's that much more important that Yelich gets right and gets back in that offense, because that's part of how the offense was able to keep the pitching staff going in the early start this season. So we got to get him back. He's got to be right. And so don't rush him. Don't rush him thinking that you need him. Make sure it's good. Because then also, while that happens, some of these young guys, some of these journeymen who haven't started off the season super, super hot, can round into form. D.L. Hall can, you know, get his pitch mix sorted out and be a dude in the rotation. Maybe one of Jacob Junis or Joe Ross or, you know, whoever else ends up figuring out for a full season and being at least one. Colin Ray, that's the other one I was thinking of. Maybe one of them ends up being a guy that you can count on for 30 starts for a year. And that's fine if you've got one of those guys and then younger ones have to step in for everyone else. Like, you've got time for that to settle in. But in the early going, while you're working through the speed bumps, the offense needs to come through more often than not. And Christian Yelich is the cornerstone of that offense. Eventually it'll be Jackson Chourio. Right now it's Christian Yelich.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I wanted to bring up as well. With Yelich now hurt, and who knows how long he'll be out or how long it'll take him to get back to the form that he was in those first 11 games, your next best bet to provide that kind of production would be Jackson Chourio. He's the only other guy with that kind of ceiling, that kind of hit for average, hit for power, cornerstone of a lineup type of ceiling. He's the only other guy. He's 20 years old. It's his first season in the big leagues. And it seems like the league is starting to figure him out a little bit. Now, he had a really good first couple of weeks there, put up some really good numbers. You know, he has some home runs under his belt. He's gotten some really good hits, shown a lot of good things. But he has been struggling over these past couple of games, you know, especially with a bunch of strikeouts, some that have looked really bad. And that's where I'm starting to think that the league is figuring Chourio out a little bit. They are making adjustments in how they pitch to him. And now he is going to have to make adjustments back. We saw this last year in the first couple of weeks of the season. Garrett Mitchell, Bryce Turang, Joey Weimer, they were all hitting really well in those first couple of weeks of the season. Then they all got cold. Mitchell got hurt. The others got cold. And they weren't really able to recover that well. Bryce Turang took him a long time to recover. Joey Weimer, it took him a long time to recover and figure out how the league was pitching to him. and how to adjust. So now Churio is going to face that same thing. And I said this last week, and I've said this, you know, multiple times, whether it's here or whether it's, you know, another radio shows, whatever it is that I'm doing, is that eventually the league is going to figure out Jackson Churio. They are going to make adjustments on how they pitch to him, and Churio is going to have to make counter adjustments. And I think we're at that point now with what he's done over these last couple of games, you know, having a couple of offers, a bunch of strikeouts mixed in there. I think we're at that point where pitchers know how to attack Churio, and Churio is going to have to adjust. Now, just with the natural talent of him as a hitter, I mean, he's been rated higher than any of these other Brewers prospects that have come through, higher than Mitchell or Frelick or Terang or any of those guys, and just his pure hitting ability. If anyone has the ability to adjust quickly to the way that the league has adjusted him, it should be Churio. But we're going to have to see. We're going to have to see how that develops and just kind of watch as these games unfold, because it may still take a little bit of time. I put in my bold predictions. He's going to struggle in the month of April, but he'll figure it out in May. You know, we may have to give him a couple of weeks here to try and figure it out, and then maybe he'll get on a hot stretch and just stay hot the rest of the way once he figures out how to adjust to the league. And it may take some time, but that's who you need to step up. That's the only guy who has the potential to step up and lead that offense with Yelich out, especially.
Yeah, agree that if anyone can do it, it's Churio, and that's why you have a guy like Churio. You know, you have him on the opening day roster. You're going to stick with him because he has the ability to do it. And even with this, you know, with the struggles that he's had now recently, that's all balanced out in a 15 game sample size. So it's anytime we're talking this early in the season, and hey, we got to do podcasts early in the season, just like we got to do them in the middle and the end of the season. So it just happens. Yeah. We talk about small sample sizes right now. So it's 15 games for him. And his batting average is at .230. His OPS is at .666. Okay. Not the best. You hope for more. Great. But he's got a few home runs. His strikeout rate is 30%, which is up, but not like it's not Keston Hirapad. Let's put it that way. His strikeout percentage.
Oh god.
In the minors. Yeah, exactly. His strikeout percentage.
We're saying it's not Keston Hira. Oh yeah, man. Right.
That's a low bar to clear.
At least it's not that.
Yeah. His strikeout percentage in the minors was like 25-26%. So 30%. Is not that elevated for him. What he's not doing, if you look at his batted ball, his hard hit rate is at about 33%, which you definitely want to see higher. And his line drive percent is at 7. You want to see him squaring up and not either beating it into the ground or hitting it up. Because his ground ball rate and fly ball rate are right around the same. It's 45 and 42. So if he's not hitting it into the ground, he's hitting it into the air. But he's not hitting those just gorgeous like line drives that where Yelich is at like 22-23% right now, on top of having a good fly ball percentage. You want to see both of those up. And so when he's squaring it up, he's hitting it way up. That's where you would like to see him get some just better contact, have that hard hit rate higher than that 33%. And he'll get there. He's just starting to, yeah, like you said, he's starting to have some, you know, some bad strikeouts, starting to have some offers. But he's too good of a hitter, and he's too good at recognizing the strike zone to not turn it around quickly. And that's going to be the exciting thing to watch this year. I don't think anyone, you know, thought he was going to come in and hit, you know, break Ted Williams for and be the next guy to hit 400 since Ted Williams, I should say, and hit, you know, break Barry Bonds' home run record. Like, it's, we needed to be realistic about what a 20-year-old is going to do this early in his career. He's 20. Like, we need to keep that perspective. He is 20 years old and doing these things and doing, again, you know, most 20-year-olds you called up to the major leagues right now would probably go 0-20. At least
Nixon Holiday pretty much was 20 to start. Yeah. And Jackson Holiday was rated number one. Churio was number two by pretty much everybody. And, you know, Churio comes up. He's able to get a hit on opening day. And Holiday, it took a week to get his first hit. So, you know, I think part of that may just be, personally, I think it may just be the bias of, oh, that's Matt Holiday's kid. We're going to put him at number one because of the name recognition. Versus Jackson Churio, but you know that's just me.
East Coast bias, anti Brewers bias. You can throw whatever you want there. I mean,
Orioles bias over there because all these Orioles guys have been number one overall prospects. Just look at the line.
You just
Adley and Henderson and just all those guys. It's like, yeah, well, might as well just make the next one the number one prospect. So, anyways, but. Yeah, it was definitely a struggle for Holiday. And now Churio, I think, is going to be going through his struggle. And we'll have to see how long it takes him to figure it out. And that's also where, too, in player development, you want to see these guys struggle sometimes. And for Churio, for the most part, he hasn't really struggled. He did kind of struggle in the first half last season in Double-A with that pre-tacked baseball. And the numbers that he was putting up were not his usual numbers. And then he finally turned it on around midseason, right when they switched the baseballs back to the normal ones. And then he just goes on an absolute tear. So, you know, he has seen a little bit of struggle, not too much. He hasn't been in extended slumps, really, just because he's that good of a hitter. But now, I mean, he's facing the best stuff he's ever faced. There's a learning curve to it. And Christian Yelich said it best at the beginning of the season. We just got to let him struggle. He's going to struggle. There's going to be moments where he's not going to be hitting the ball well. And we just have to let him go through that and learn from it. And that's how he's going to be made a better ball player. Instead of just trying to crush him with all these expectations, like he is going to struggle. He's a 20-year-old in the big leagues. There is going to be moments where he looks like a 20-year-old in the big leagues. He's having those right now. And, you know, eventually he'll figure it out and he'll be able to get going. And it's just growing pains. And after all the young kids that we've seen come up these last couple of years, all of them have pretty much gone through growing pains. Terang went through growing pains. Mitchell has gone through literal pains. Weimer and Frelick have gone through growing pains. And now it's Churio's turn. I mean, remember when Corbin Burnes went through his growing pains in developing as a pitcher? Yeah. Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, same thing. They're going to go through it. None of these guys have come up and immediately, right away, dominated and stayed dominating and never went through any sort of down rough patch. They've all had their share of struggles, and now it's Churio's turn.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember who had talked about it recently, if it was someone we had just talked to or not, but Bobby Witt Jr. was a comp that was brought up. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. again,
his first year, he was not good,
right? Exactly, but you saw the glimpses of Bobby Witt Jr.-ness in him, but
and then year two,
that is exactly his second year was just absolutely phenomenal. And so, Churio, if that happens to Churio, it certainly doesn't mean he's a dud. It just means he's friggin' 20. Like, it's bound to happen. And if he bounces back within the season and looks outstanding, it's also because he's Jackson Churio. Like, and he's just that dang good. But that was always going to be one of the intriguing storylines of this year, is how exactly does his path end up looking? How does the league adjust to him? How does he adjust back to the league? And where do you end up going from there? And I love that you pulled up so many names in Brewers history of players, especially like Brandon Woodruff in particular, is a guy who, you know, was, I guess, of the big three, him and Peralta and Burnes, he kind of stayed the steadiest of the three, but he still had plenty of struggles early. All of them did. Every young guy does when they come up, unless you're like, again, like friggin' Ken Griffey Jr. or something, just Hall of Fame level insanity. And even some Hall of Famers end up, you know, struggling in their first year. So, like, that, even that's not a...
You know how long it took Robin Yount to actually get to be productive? I mean, he came up as an 18-year-old. You know, if you look back at his stats those first couple of years, they really weren't that great. When he first came up in 74, Robin Yount's numbers weren't that, you know, jump off the page. But, you know, then again, he was an 18-year-old playing at the big league level, as Matt is doing some quick pulling up of the numbers here, because I don't have them in front of me. A more prepared podcast host probably would have. He was not that great his first couple of years, right, Matt?
No. Five of his first 6 years, he had an OPS plus under 100. So under league average for five of his first 6 years. That seventh year, 1980, he ends up blowing up, 840 OPS, 23 home runs, league-leading 49 doubles. And, oh, by the way, his first career All-Star appearance and Silver Slugger Award, and ends up receiving a vote for MVP, and then kind of just the
does, you know, Robin Yount things from there. The rest is history.
Five of his first 6 years were considered below average. Robin Yount, one of the greatest baseball players in history.
Yeah. That's how it goes sometimes. They struggle early on to adjust. It takes guys a while to truly understand, you know, how to hit big league pitching. And some guys never figure it out. But, you know, Churio, just with how gifted he is as a hitter, I believe he will. The Brewers believe he will. And, you know, obviously we can see that the talent is there with him, and it's just going to take time. And that's where, you know, Yelich, the veteran of the group, is basically telling everyone, like, hey, look, it's going to take time. He's going to struggle. I've gone through it. Christian Yelich, early in his career, he went through that same thing too. All of these guys, that they've done that. I mean, even Ryan Braun, going back to him, I mean, he had his share of struggles there early on. Now, a lot of them were defensively when he was over there at third base. There were a lot of defensive struggles over there. But still, you know, like Ricky Weeks, same thing. He came up, he had some struggles, and then he finally figured it out and went on a stretch of some really good seasons. So it's going to happen for all of these guys. And Churio's just kind of next in line to do it. But it puts the Brewers in a good spot in these years coming ahead, where they have Churio and Mitchell and Weimer and Frelick and Terang, who have now gone through all those things, and they are primed to be so much better for having done it. And we're seeing that with Terang. We're seeing that with Frelick right now. And we'll see it with the rest of those guys eventually too. So that's just putting the Brewers in a good spot. But to kind of circle back to the rotation, that's where the rotation may also be kind of a struggle, because if you're going to be depending on your young prospects, your Robert Gassers, your Carlos Rodriguez's, to come up and be productive right away, those pitchers, they're going to have their share of struggles too, as hitters figure them out a little bit. And that's what does concern me about this rotation, Matt. And that's where the rotation, I think, is going to be their biggest need at the trade deadline. They're going to have to get a starter out there to pair with Freddie Peralta, because, you know, right now, I really don't think DL Hall is going to be it this year. I know it's only been a couple of starts, but, you know, there have been some kind of – his performances have not been great so far. And it's going to take a while for him to build up and develop and be a reliable starter. And the other group of veterans, I really don't know if you can cobble together enough for a deep playoff run with that kind of rotation. And then relying on the kids, relying on Gasser and Rodriguez, who have no prior MLB experience – that's also going to present a problem. So, you know, that when they go through their growing pains, then who do you turn to? So I think that's where I know it's early. I know it's still mid-April, but when it comes to the trade deadline, the rotation, that's going to be where the Brewers have to look.
Right. Which is fine. I mean, unless you're the Dodgers or, you know, the Yankees, essentially, like plenty of teams set themselves up to just get to the trade deadline and then do what you need to do at that point, because then you start to get guys at, you know, lower prices. You know, you can get a guy who is a rental for a couple months and you're giving up less for him because of that fact, versus if you try to target that same person, you know, during the off season, or sign a free agent for a 1-year deal in the off season. That's kind of how the way the world works a little bit these days, especially for your mid-market teams. And so if that was the plan for the Brewers all along, is, hey, we'll figure it out, and once we get to the trade deadline, we'll bring someone in, you know, who can help us. That almost seemed a little bit to be the plan at, you know, at first base and some other positions last year for the Brewers. They always plan on doing that at reliever, even though it never seems to freaking work. Nope. They seem to have the depth now to where they're not going to have to worry about that. But
plus, they're getting Devin back around the deadline. So
that's the best, you know, trade deadline addition you could have.
Absolutely.
But if that's the plan, that's totally fine. Again, you just have to get to that mid-season finish line as it is, and be in a position where, yep, we're either in first place or we're close enough to first place. The plan worked. Now let's bring someone in to really just add some firepower to that offense. Kind of to go back to earlier, is maybe you've had a guy or two step up and be a Colin Ray from 2023, or a, mm-hmm. you know, an Eric Lauer from before that you maybe didn't expect to be as strong a contributor as he ended up being. And he ends up, you know, locking down that fourth spot or something like that, or an Adrian Hauser, you know, whomever. You get one or two of those guys where you can add hopefully just one guy, maybe a couple, you know, to support it, and then really, you know, finish strong. More often than not, that the Brewers have been able to do that well. And if this year it has to be starting pitching that they do it with, then that's how it is. You just got to get there. You need the offense to keep supporting it. You need the bullpen to keep supporting it. Have the starting pitching bring you along and just hold in there long enough. Freddy Peralta's, he's pitching like an ace, man. Like, that's he deserves some love on this episode for what he's done to start. Needs to keep doing that, unfortunately, but he also needs a little bit of help from his rotation mates to keep it going until the trade deadline.
Yeah, and he does not have a Corbin Burnes or Brandon Woodruff to help him in that rotation, which is, you know, a much different situation than what he's used to with that group. But yeah, so I mean, pitching, the price of pitching at the deadline is always high. It always is. Everyone wants starting pitching at the trade deadline. The Brewers, luckily, they do have a very strong farm system. We'll see how willing they are to trade from it in order to get those additions that they need. But that's something that we will see the Brewers address when we get there. We've still got a couple of months. But yeah, a lot of the rotation will sort itself out. Right now, it looks like, I mean, you could probably add three starters, you know, if you wanted to. Like, you could go out and get three guys to really help fill out this rotation. Once we get to July, obviously they're not going to trade for three separate starting pitchers, but they're going to trade for one, maybe two, and you'll know which guys are locked into those spots once we get there. Could D.L. Hall still be in the rotation around then? Will the Brewers have to move him out of the rotation? Who's going to be healthy of those veterans? You know, Wade Miley, right. Jacob Junis have had shoulder issues. Who knows what it'll end up being. Injuries always pop up throughout the season, unfortunately. And that's going to change who's all available and who's not. So we will see as that unfolds. And the Brewers, they are going back out on the road, and they face off against the Cardinals this weekend. No one likes them. But, Matt, good news, they are in last in the NL Central. So seeing them in last 2 years in a row so far, now it's still early, obviously, but 2 years in a row so far, hey, I mean, that's – if there's as good a news as possible to end this podcast with – it's that.
You mean when the only thing you do in the off season is add three starting pitchers with an average age of about 36 years old, you don't end up improving from the cellar? That's shocking to me.
Yeah, to replace the 45-year-old, however old he was, Adam Wainwright, who departed. I mean, their average age of their rotation got older with Adam Wainwright retiring somehow. That's
old strategy, Cotton.
Yeah, you think the Brewers got a bunch of old guys in their rotation with Wade Miley approaching 50 per Pat Murphy. Yeah, it's almost worse down there in St. Louis. What a shame.
Yeah. Just
darn. What a shame. That'll do it for us. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. Follow the podcast account at coldbrew_pod. Follow both of us on Twitter as well. And of course, follow on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast or to podcasts in general. Be sure to follow us there so that you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. This has been the Cold Brew Podcast.